Today is Monday, January 18, 2010. I'm Laurel Nemi, your host for The Wildlife, a program that probes the mysteries of the animal world through interviews with scientists and other wildlife investigators. Today on The Wildlife, we'll have a creature call contest. I'll play a series of creature calls and provide hints on each one. Listeners of both the radio show and podcast will then have 4 weeks to enter the contest via email. Also today on The Wildlife, we'll get an update on the elephant seals at the Piedras Blancas Rookery in California. Christine Heinrichs, a docent there, will tell us about the latest antics of some newborn pups and the elephant seal census that was recently released. Let me turn first to the creature call contest. I'll play a series of 15 creature calls. I'll start by playing the call, then provide hints on each one, and play the call again. At the end of the show, I'll replay each of the calls one final time. Listeners of both the radio show and podcast will have 4 weeks to enter the contest via email. All you will have to do is email me your guesses. You can send me an email at laurel@laurelnemi.com. That's Laurel, L-A-U-R-E-L, at laurelnemi, all one word, that's L-A-U-R-E-L, N as in Nancy, E, M as in Mary, E, .com. To win, you won't have to get them all right. The person who guesses the most creature calls correctly will win a copy of my book, Animal Investigators, How the World's First Wildlife Forensic Lab is Solving Crimes and Saving Endangered Species. It's sort of a wildlife CSI, and it was published by Scribner. If several people have the same number of correct answers, the person who emailed me first with their responses will be the winner. If there are two or more people who emailed me at the same time, I'll draw a winner randomly. Now, let's start the wildlife's first creature call contest. We'll start the contest in the cold water of the Arctic Ocean. Here is creature call number one. This first creature call comes from a type of marine mammal. These marine mammals grow to be about 15 feet long and weigh about 3,300 pounds or 1,500 kilograms. While the calves are bluish gray, when they're adults, they lose their pigment and turn all white. These ocean creatures normally live in the frigid Arctic and subarctic waters, but some migrate south to warmer water in summer. What's interesting is that they have no dorsal fin. That lets them swim more easily under the Arctic ice sheets. Typically, these animals eat fish, squid, crustaceans, and octopi. They're best known for their high-pitched twitter sound, which can even be heard above the water. That's earned them the affectionate nickname of sea canaries. This animal was even the title character of a famous children's song by Raffi. Now listen again and see if you can guess creature call number one. For our second creature call, we'll stay in the ocean, but not so far north. Here is creature call number two. This animal is another type of marine mammal called a pinniped, which means winged foot. These animals have coarse, short fur and small external ear flaps on each side of its head. In the ocean, their sleek bodies let them dive up to 600 feet, where they search for fish, squid, clams, and crabs. Their nostrils seal up automatically when they dive, which helps them stay underwater for up to 40 minutes at a time. They're also fantastic swimmers and can sprint underwater as fast as 25 miles per hour in short bursts. That's great for helping them to escape their main predators, namely killer whales and sharks. On land, these creatures are more awkward, but what's interesting is that they have the ability to rotate their hind flippers forward, which helps them scoot along beaches and rocky shorelines. You can find these animals all over. Their range extends from the subarctic to tropical waters in both the northern and southern hemispheres. The only place you won't find them is the Atlantic Ocean. They're intelligent animals that you can often see showing off their natural behaviors in shows at zoos, aquariums, and circuses. They make all sorts of strange sounds, from barks to honks to trumpets and roars. In fact, a baby or pup can pick out its mother from among hundreds just from her sound. Now listen again and see if you can identify creature call number two. For creature call number three, we'll stay in the ocean one last time with a third marine mammal. Here's creature call number three. These marine mammals live in pods and have two blowholes. They're huge animals. They grow to be about 50 feet or 16 meters long and generally weigh about 30 to 50 tons. Their hearts alone weigh over 400 pounds, which is almost 200 kilograms. These creatures are acrobats of the sea, and their name comes from the motion they make as they arch their backs out of the water in preparation for a dive. Their colors range from white to gray to black to mottled. Their flippers are huge and can be up to one-third of their body length. Their tails, known as flukes, are also massive. They can be up to 12 feet wide. Their tails are also interesting because each animal has distinctive patches of white on the underside. In fact, these markings are so unique that they are like fingerprints that can be used to identify each individual. They're endurance swimmers and travel over 3,100 miles, which is 5,000 kilometers, during their long seasonal migrations with virtually no rest along the way. Their migrations take them from the cold polar waters in summer, where they feed on krill, plankton, and small fish, to warmer tropical waters in winter, where they mate and calve. Adults don't eat in the warm water, but instead live off their layer of blubber. These creatures are great singers, with sounds that change depending on their purpose, like mating. Their varied and imaginative repertoire includes sequences of squeaks, grunts, and other sounds to make a complex and eerie and beautiful tune. Now listen again and see if you can identify creature call number three. Thank you. For creature call number 4, we'll go half in and half out of the water, but this time it'll be fresh water. Here's creature call number 4. These creatures live in freshwater rivers, swamps, and lakes in the southeast United States, mostly in Florida and Louisiana. They average about 10 feet long and can weigh 1,000 pounds. They're superb swimmers, but out of water, they appear awkward and ungainly. Their olive brown, gray, or nearly black bodies and creamy white undersides camouflage them extremely well in their swampy habitat. They're apex predators that love to eat fish, turtles, snakes, and small mammals, but they're opportunists as well and will eat almost anything. The species is over 150 million years old and reminiscent of dinosaurs with their armored bodies, muscular tails, and powerful jaws. In fact, they have the strongest bite of any living animal. They're also a conservation success story. Historically, this animal was nearly extinct due to hunting and loss of habitat. Laws to protect it have helped it recover, and now it is thriving, with populations in both Florida and Louisiana exceeding 1 million animals in both states. These animals are very vocal, and communication begins when the young are still in their eggs with their high-pitched whines that indicate that they're ready to hatch. As adults, they make loud, throaty bellows that can be heard from up to 165 yards away. When courting their mates, they make cough-like purrs and also use many subaudible and nonverbal forms of communication. Now, listen again and see if you can identify creature call number 4. For creature call number 5, we'll stay in the reptile family but move to the American Southwest. Have a listen. This reptile has been a symbol of the American Southwest since prehistoric times and frequently figures in both ancient mythology and modern stories. It has a fearsome reputation and can grow to over 7 feet long. It's a beautiful animal with a brown, gray, or pinkish basic color, depending on its habitat, and dark diamond-shaped markings with lighter colored outlines on its back. Its face has dark stripes, like a Zorro's mask, that run diagonally from its eyes to its jaws, and its tail is almost raccoon-like with alternating black and white bands. It lives in much of the Southwest, with a range that extends through Arkansas, Texas, Oklahoma, parts of New Mexico, Arizona, California, and Mexico. It likes to live anywhere from desert flats to rocky hillsides, grassy plains, forested areas, river bottoms, and coastal prairies. It's extremely poisonous and, when threatened, will stand its ground. Partly because of its wide distribution, this animal bites hundreds of people each year and accounts for more serious and fatal bites than any other North American reptile. Its loud buzzing sound is distinctive and can be used to identify this creature. Now listen again and see if you can identify creature call number 5. For creature call number 6, we'll stick with another cultural symbol, but this time of the American West. Here's creature call number 6. This animal has roamed North America since prehistoric times, and when Columbus landed here, there were probably 60 million animals. They have a rugged appearance with a massive head, short, thick neck, large shoulder hump, and small hindquarters, and thick, dark brown fur. They stand about 6 feet tall at their shoulder and are about 10 feet or more long. They can weigh anywhere from 900 to 2,000 pounds. They mainly eat grasses, and to a casual observer watching them graze, they appear peaceful and slow and clumsy. However, in reality, they're extremely unpredictable, aggressive, and fast. They can run 35 miles an hour, like a horse, turn on a dime, and gallop for long distances. Their eyesight is poor, but they have an excellent sense of hearing and smell. For centuries, these creatures provided food, clothing, shelter, and fuel for Native Americans. They used to be abundant, with about 40 million of them in 1800. However, by 1900, they'd nearly been exterminated, with less than 1,000 living in North America. Today, however, you can find wild populations in Yellowstone National Park and also find hybrids being raised as livestock on ranches. They make a wonderful range of sounds, from pig-like grunts to angry bellows. Now, listen again and see if you can identify creature call number 6. Creature call number 7, we'll stay out west with a different mammal. Listen to creature call number 7. animal is one of the largest mammals in North America and Eastern Asia. Bulls grow to about 700 pounds and average about 5 feet tall at the shoulder and 8 feet from nose to tail. You often find them in the western United States of California, Oregon, and Washington, and the western province of British Columbia, Canada, where they enjoy their forest habitat and feed on grasses, plants, leaves, and bark. These animals have an even number of toes on each foot, just like camels, goats, and cattle. They're also ruminants, with a four-chambered stomach. Males have large antlers that shed each year. These creatures are often hunted as a game species for their meat, and in parts of Asia, their antlers and velvet are used in traditional medicines. During rutting season, the males spar and make loud screams called bugling that can be heard for miles and help them dominate other males and attract females. It works because females are attracted to the males that bugle more often and have the loudest call. Now listen again and see if you can identify creature call number 7. Creature call number 8 will stick with another common mammal that you can find here in Vermont, although they're hibernating at this time of year. Here's creature call number 8. These rodents are a kind of stout-bodied marmot. They're the largest member of the squirrel family, with distinctive round bodies, black feet, and reddish-brown or brown fur. They're about 18 inches long, have 4 to 6 inch tails, and weigh between 4 to 14 pounds. You can find them all over the eastern and central United States, as well as north across Canada. You'll see them in open fields and on woodland edges, usually feasting on low green vegetation. Many gardeners hate them because they feed voraciously during summer and fall. They gorge themselves like this so that they can build up a fat reserve for winter. Once the first frost arrives, however, they disappear into their underground burrows where they hibernate until spring. Now, listen again and see if you can identify creature call number 8. Creature call number 9 will stick with common rodents, but this time move to the American West. Listen to creature call number 9. These animals are closely related to ground squirrels and are native to the North American grasslands. They can be found throughout the western United States and range from Canada to Mexico. There are 5 species of these burrowing rodents. Generally, they grow to about 12 to 16 inches and weigh between 1 to 3 pounds. They're primarily herbivores, eating vegetables and fruits, and the occasional insect. They're highly social and live in large colonies or towns that can span hundreds of acres. Their individual tunnel systems can extend up to 16 feet deep and almost 100 feet across. Indeed, their burrows serve a key ecological function by channeling the rain into the water table and thus preventing runoff and soil erosion. The tunnels also prevent compaction of the soil, which is a common problem from cattle grazing. These creatures are also an important prey species and serve as the primary diet for other prairie species like the black-footed ferret, golden eagle, and American badger. Even so, they're often seen as pests and exterminated by ranchers and farmers because of the damage they do. They get their name both from their habitat and their warning call. When these animals detect predators, they alert the others with a special high-pitched bark-like call. Scientists say that these animals use a sophisticated system of vocalizations to identify their different predators. That way, the colonies know whether it's an owl, coyote, or ferret that's on the attack. This call is extremely important, as raising the alarm and disappearing quickly is really their only defense against predators. Now, listen again and see if you can identify creature call number 9. For our last creature call, number 10, we'll travel to India and go wild with this top predator. Here is creature call number 10. These creatures are the largest members of the cat family and are renowned for their power and strength. They're hunted as trophies and also for their body parts that are used in traditional Asian medicine. Wild populations have declined significantly from hunting and forest destruction, with all of the 5 subspecies endangered. The subspecies you're hearing on this show is the one that lives in India and is the most common. These animals live alone and scent mark their large territories to deter rivals. They're formidable hunters and will travel miles to find their prey, which consists of large mammals like buffalo, deer, and wild pigs. They have distinctive fur, with no two animals having the same patterned coats. Because they hunt mostly at dawn and at dusk, their color pattern camouflages them well in the shadows of tall grasses. There, they stalk their prey by lying in wait and then creeping silently toward their victims when they spring quickly for a fatal pounce. They use this tactic of surprise because they're not good at chasing prey long distances. Now, imagine you're in the forests of India and listen to this fearsome predator. That concludes the Wildlife's first Creature Call Contest. As I mentioned before, listeners of both the radio show and podcast will then have 4 weeks until 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on February 15, 2010, to enter the contest via email. All you need to do is email me your guesses at laurel@laurelnimi.com. That's Laurel, L-A-U-R-E-L, at laurelnimi. That's Laurel, N as in Nancy, E, M as in Mary, E.com. Please be sure to put Creature Call Contest in the subject line and list your guesses in order with the numbers. I'll play these sounds quickly one last time at the end of the show. But first, let's get an update on elephant seal. When I first spoke with Christine Heinrichs, a docent at the Piedras Blancas Elephant Seal Rookery in California, for the first episode of The Wildlife, which aired on December 7, 2009, we talked at length about the strange antics and lifestyle of elephant seals. This time, when I spoke with her on January 13th, I asked her to give me an update on the latest adventures at the beach.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me. I'm excited to hear what's been happening at the elephant seal rookery recently.
Well, you know, we're going to actually go out at noon today. It's, you know, every day is different. There's always excitement. And I thought, oh, maybe I should call you. But then I thought, you know, every day there's something. We had a storm pass through last night, and it was quite violent in this area with a lot of thunder and lightning and very heavy rains. And of course, that's a problem. There's there's two big culverts at the beach that drain water off the ranch land on the other side of the highway. Last year, a lot of pups drowned in that.
Oh, really?
Yes. Plus, we're under a high surf advisory, and they're saying from now through Friday, they're saying that we may have waves with 24-foot tops. And because the pups can't swim, those that are on portions of the beach that get inundated with high surf are very likely to be washed away and die.
So what will you do? What can you do?
There's really nothing that can be done. And the state and the federal government have a policy of not intervening unless it's something human-made, like, you know, a seal who comes in trapped in netting or something like that. And anyway, you know, if they wanted to, I mean, there's thousands of animals down there. There's really nothing anyone can do. So, yeah, so we're kind of looking at a lot of drama on the beach, and we'll just have to see what happens.
Wow. Now, recently, how many pups are there on the beach?
Well,
what's been happening there?
Let me get the, you know, they don't do a census that often. They did do one on, the one I sent you on December 28th.
Right, and I wanted to ask about that because it said that the numbers, that there were 450 adult females counted on the 28th of December 2009, and that it was 40% above last year's count.
Yeah.
Of adult females. So what does that mean, both in terms of more births, but also why is it so much greater this year?
Well, that's what they're waiting to see. You know, they kind of need the rest of the season to unfold. Does it mean that there are actually more, or does it mean that it's just an earlier season? Could this be something that's in response to climate change? You know, we just have to get more data. We just don't know really what's going on yet.
Wow, that's really interesting. And how often do they take the census? How often do they do counts like
that? Well, you know, they don't do it that often. They'll probably do one in February sometime. You know, as the season, as they're looking at what may be the height of the season to try and get a top number. But it's really, you know, they don't cooperate in raising their little flippers to be counted.
You know? So how do you count elephant seals?
Well, with some difficulty, there's a couple of strategies. You know, they've talked about taking photographs and then counting those, because the thing is they're always moving all the time. And unless there's an unusual scar or marking on one of the critters, you can't tell one from the next, pretty much.
Right.
And so, yeah, so, and they have other strategies of, you know, dividing up the beach and saying, well, we'll count the number of seals here and extrapolate from there to make some kind of educated guess. But, yeah, it's definitely difficult to do a census.
Have you ever tried to count them? You personally?
I haven't participated in an official count, but I've informally tried it, and it's definitely a challenge. because it's easy to lose track. You know, you go, oh, 28, 29, 30. Oh, wait a minute, did I count that one? Is that, did that one move over here? Oh, there's two there, you know.
Because you can't, like, check them off as you...
No, you can't. So it's definitely tricky. My husband flies. He's got a pilot's license, and he's talked about flying over to get, you know, photographs that you would then put together, and then, you know, that would give you a shot at least a better count of who's on the beach at that moment. There's always a lot of animals in the water, so.
And would a census take account of the animals in the water?
Not usually. They usually take a count and count what they actually see and then rely on that. But there are, you know, other biologists have worked on this program and trying to count other things and trying to estimate populations. And so the guideline that they use is that for every pup born on the beach, there are about 4 animals in the wild. So they actually use that number, and we have close to 4,000 births on this beach, so they estimate about 16,000 animals use this rookery.
Oh, really? Yeah, and I was taken, actually, with something you wrote in your email to me when you said... You had just gone down there and you said, when you first look at the beach, it looks like a jigsaw puzzle, a bunch of brown and tan splotches shifting around. It takes a while for your eye to be able to pick out the differences and discern what's going on. I thought that was so eloquent.
Well, you know, it really kind of is, and I've realized that in talking to people who aren't used to being there, it's like anything else. You have to get used to looking at it. And I think I wrote that because what struck me was that my friend was there. She had wanted to come up, and we said, oh, look at that one over there. You know, she's just about to have her pup. And, of course, you say that, and you're pointing at a beach that has 40 animals on it, you know, and they're all lying on top of each other. And so it's not easy to tell which one you're pointing at. And it turned out that she was actually watching a completely different animal. And it wasn't until, you know, I said, oh, look what happened just now, that then that caught her eye and she was able to see that new mother.
And you had told me a little bit about witnessing a birth just recently. Can you tell me what happened?
Well, there, I witnessed one last Monday and this past Monday as well.
Oh, really?
They're happening constantly out there with 4,000 animals giving birth in a 6-week period. There's a lot of births every day. So, you know, but it just depends on whether you're there. It's hard to tell for us, although, you know, there are a lot of... anecdotal examples. You know, I've noticed that, you know, I think it helps if you're a mother, if you've had a baby, you know, like, oh, I can see her, you know.
And you can really empathize.
Right. So, you know, you can actually, when the mothers are quiet, if before they've had their pups, you can sometimes, if they're lying on their backs, you can kind of see the pup moving inside them.
Interesting.
Yeah, and sometimes...
And do they go off to be by themselves as much as they can?
No, not at all. They pretty much stay... These are animals that just don't even mind humans around them. They stay close to each other. They kind of stay where they are. Some are on their own, and I watched one mother this week who... She was a little bit testy. She kind of cleared everyone out from a circle around her. She wanted to... have her own spot, but many of them just pretty much lie on top of each other, with of course the result that the pups get mixed up and whose pup is whose. And there, I'll tell you later about the one I watched on Monday that kind of had a problem with that. But anyway, I have certainly noticed that they a certain restlessness about them. They often flip the sand onto their backs, and the restless mothers-to-be may be digging an actual hole around themselves because they're flipping so much sand onto their backs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so there's definitely some restlessness. Sometimes you can kind of see a contraction ripple down their body.
Huh. And are there any midwife elephant seals that help some of the other mothers?
Nope, they're just independent souls. They just lie there and squirt out that pup. They sometimes come tail first, and sometimes they come head first. I was actually looking to see if anyone has any numbers on that. It doesn't seem to matter much, and I wasn't able to find any proportion as to which way is, if either, is more dominant.
Oh, interesting. So they could come either tail or head first.
Right.
And is one easier than another? You would think the head first would be...
I think it is. It looks like the tail first is a little bit more difficult, but I don't really have any data on that.
So you recently witnessed a birth that was tail first, or
right, birth. Right. Two of them that were tail first.
Oh, and really?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
What happens when? How long does a birth take? How long, sort of, from?
Well, of course, when does it start, you know?
That's true.
How do you know?
It could take days, weeks.
I know. It's such a wacky area, you know, and you look at it and you go, well, you know, they typically are on the beach for 4 to 5 days before the birth happens. But last week someone was telling me that they saw a female swim onto shore and within an hour have a pup. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, they said she just made it.
She's probably always done everything late, you know.
Yeah. So.
And what once the baby is fully out, are its eyes open? Does it recognize its mother? How does the mother, you know, does it feed right away, or does it really vary?
Well, it does. There's some variation. This one birth on Monday, this mother was just a nervous mother, and she was very fretful during the delivery, and she was in a space that was pretty crowded on the beach anyway, so she was right between, you know, several other mothers that had their pups a week or so ago, and so their pups were larger. And she had been kind of trying to steal one of those pups, and finally she settled down and...
She'd been trying to steal one of the pups.
Yes, they sometimes do that. They know that they want to be mothers. Well, they just go over and they just kind of start, you know, barking and even attacking, making aggressive moves against the actual mother.
Oh, really?
And trying to chase her away from that pup.
Huh. That's interesting.
It is. It is.
Maybe
yeah.
Because you're so scared that you don't want to give birth to your own, you just grab another one, then it won't have to happen.
Yeah, right. I'll skip the delivery.
Yeah. But once you're pregnant, there's no going back. And so was she successful at getting these pups, a different pup? Clearly not.
No, not at all. Of course, those mothers defend their pups, and they don't want to give them up. So she finally had this pup, and it was tail first, and it looked a little bit like it was maybe a little difficult. It seemed a little stuck for maybe 5 minutes or so, but it's not a long time. You know, this happens pretty fast once things start happening, once that we can observe. And so the pup was there, and the pup seemed a little, you know, he's a little groggy, and kind of, you know, lifted his head up a little bit, but he didn't start to bark. So as soon as she had that pup, she went over and tried to steal one of those other pups again.
Even though she had her own?
Even though her own was back by her tail, she was looking at other mothers with other pups.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So she didn't turn around to look for her pup, and she didn't turn around to bark at it, which is the way they kind of recognize each other.
Huh.
So she was fussing around at these other mothers, and there's her pup lying on the beach still with some of the amniotic sac on his back. and just kind of weak. And this went on for a while, and finally her pup started to bark a little bit, at which point she instantly paid attention to him, and she was so excited, and there was her pup. But he wasn't as active as the older pups, so she kept getting distracted and going back and trying to take one of those pups. So everyone was watching this, and it was really, you know, it was very alarming because there's all these animals, and that little newborn, if he doesn't speak up for himself, could be, you know, just covered in sand, and that would be the end of him. But after a couple of hours, he did bark a few more times, and every time he would bark, she would be very excited to find him. And then she'd settle down and forget he was there. You know,
so
they're not all good mothers.
The squeaky wheel, or in this case, the noisy seal gets the attention.
It gets the attention. But he was starting to kind of perk up after 2 hours, and when I left there, she had found him, and he was squeaking enough that she was staying with him. She just, you know, they don't want you to attribute human attitudes to these animals, but she clearly seemed so happy. She was just lying next to him, and she even rolled over on him, and just seemed like it looked like things were going to work out for them.
And is there a way to recognize them, to see, or they all pretty much look so much alike that it would be hard to pick that particular pup out again later on?
It is very difficult, unless they're tagged and you can actually read the number on the tag. Some researchers have done some, have looked into the question as to whether mothers and pups recognize each other in the future, and they found that they simply don't.
They really don't?
They really don't. Once, you know, they spend that month together on the beach, and they do need to recognize each other, and they do then by both their bark, they bark to each other, and by scent. But in the future, once it's over, they move on.
Oh, that's interesting. And then do they come back year after year to the same beach? Or will
they change
places to give birth?
They have looked into that. They find about 75% do return to the same beach. And they have a color-coded tagging system that, you know, different colors for different beaches. So because we're at Piedras Blancas, which means white rocks, tags for our beach are white, but they also have green, red, orange, yellow, blue, and we see all colors of tags on the beach. They aren't necessarily entirely faithful to the beach where they were born.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, I appreciate the update, and I look forward to getting more updates throughout the year, if you don't mind.
Well, I would love to, because it's a constantly changing, it is an annual cycle in their lives. They do repeat things at the same time each year, and it's just a constantly changing life on the beach.
Thank you so much, Christine. I appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed that update on the elephant seal rookery from Christine Heinrichs. Now, let me replay the 10 animal sounds for the wildlife's first creature call contest. As you recall, creature call number 1 is the sound made by a marine mammal that lives in the Arctic and is known as a sea canary. Here is creature call number 1. Creature call number 2 is a pinniped with external ear flaps. You often see this animal showing off its natural behaviors in shows at zoos, aquariums, and circuses. Here is creature call number two. Creature call number three is made by a marine mammal that grows to 50 feet long and is both an acrobat and singer of the sea. Listen again and see if you can identify creature call number three. Creature call number four comes from a reptile that lives in freshwater rivers, swamps, and lakes in the southeast United States. It nearly went extinct from hunting, but is now abundant. Here's creature call number four. Creature call number five is made by a dangerous reptile that can grow to over 7 feet long and lives throughout the southwest United States. Listen to creature call number five. Creature call number six is the sound of a mammal that roamed North America since prehistoric times and used to be vital to the survival of Native Americans. See if you can identify creature call number six. Creature call number seven is made by one of the largest mammals in North America that you can often find in the western United States. Here's creature call number seven.
Thank you.
Creature call number 8 comes from the largest member of the squirrel family. It weighs between 4 and 14 pounds and can be found all over the eastern and central United States. Here's creature call number 8. Creature call number 9 is the alarm call of a common rodent of the American West that is native to the North American grasslands and is highly social, so much so that it lives in towns or colonies. See if you know creature call number 9. The final call, creature call number 10, was made by a top predator from India that is the largest member of the cat family. Here's creature call number 10. As I said before, listeners of both the radio show and podcast will have 4 weeks to enter the contest via email. All you have to do is email me your guesses before 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Monday, February 15, 2010. You can send your email to me at laurel@laurelnimi.com. That's Laurel, L-A-U-R-E-L, at Laurel Nimi. That's L-A-U-R-E-L, N as in Nancy, E, M as in Mary, E.com. If you want to listen to these sounds again or hear other episodes, you can find archived episodes of The Wildlife on iTunes, at my website, laurelnimi.com, and at laurelnimi.podbean.com. Remember, you can stream The Wildlife live at theradiator.org every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And, of course, if you have comments about this show or ideas for future ones, you can email me at laurel@laurelnimi.com. This has been The Wildlife. I'm your host, Laurel Nimi, and you're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMM LP, in Burlington, Vermont.